You must figure I'm a real dangerous man.
South Alabama, her daddy had a heart like a 9-pound hammer. Think he even did a little time in the slammer. What was I thinking? She snuck out one night and met me by the front gate. Her daddy came out waving that 12-gauge. We tore out the drive, he peppered my tailgate. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking that a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might mean. I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking? What was I thinking? By the county line, the cops were nipping on. Kicked it in four wheels, shut off the lights and tore through a cornfield. What was I thinking? Out the other side, she was hollering faster. Took the dirt road, had the radio blasting. Hit the honky tonk for a little post dancing. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by. Kill tattoo, tried to cut in, I knocked out his front tooth. We ran outside, hood sliding like Bo Duke. What was I thinking? I finally got her home at a 2:30. Later, daddy's in a lawn chair sitting on the driveway. Put it in park as he started my way. What was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Then she gave a come and get me grin, and like a bullet we were gone again. 'Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might mean. I know what I was feeling, yeah, I know what I was feeling. What was I thinking?
Join that sexy thing for living way out here on the Survival Circle Network. Yep, Amy's back on weeknights except Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time with an hour of trivia, fun, and interesting stories. Join her for living way out here.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
All right, here we are. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. It is Thursday. It's the 14th of April. And sorry I wasn't on last night, but like I said, I had some other things I had to take care of down in Tucson. And it was an interesting meeting we had down there. It was a... there's a guy down there that's been teaching on the Constitution for 11 years, he said. He said, if one person shows up, he said, I'll teach. And he says he's been getting, you know, it's gradually, slowly building up until he goes to the same Chinese buffet thing. He's got a nice big room that he rents, or they, I don't know if they just let him use it because people spend so much money on food there or what, but I didn't ask. But last night, a couple of the Finicum girls were there and gave a nice presentation about, you know, just carrying on Lavoie's legacy. And quite naturally, it was very well received. People they just went nuts over it. Those girls are awesome. They're just amazing. They have the same talent for teaching and getting that message across that Lavoie did. And I can't help but think that there's more to it than that sometimes, but. At any rate, and I talked for a little while about the Coalition of Western States and a couple of other things, but in a liberal stronghold like Tucson, Arizona, they had 85 people show up at this deal last night, and of course it was a little more because of the Finicum girls were there, but he says he's been doing 40 or 50 very regularly. Lately, he says he's been building up, it's a little bit at a time. Nice guy, great guy that does this. As a matter of fact, he's invited me to be on the radio show with him next week. And so that ought to be fun. I'm not sure what he wants me to talk about, but I guess he'll let me know when he thinks it's time. But 85 folks, and there was, I was a little surprised this time because, and I've mentioned this before, a lot of these rallies and stuff that we go to, we see people that are, 60, 70, 80 years old, and that's, makes up the overwhelming majority of them. But in this one was a little different. Yes, there were some older people there, but there was, I'd say probably, I'd say safely... somewhere between half and two-thirds were under 50, which was encouraging because we just don't see that much anymore. We're preaching to the choir. We're preaching to the people that already know this. They're preaching to the people that know what liberty is, what liberty was, and how it used to be. And I think they come just for nostalgic reasons. Oh, yes, I remember how it was back in the 40s, or whatever. But we're seeing a lot of younger people. The guy that does the presentation for the he also teaches certain swimming techniques and aspects to Navy SEALs. He does this regularly as a part of his income. And so he's quite the guy.
And he was only, he might be 40, yeah, maybe. I didn't ask, but he might be 40 years old. So anyway, we had a good time. It was real good food, and spent about a little over two hours there. And then I went to another Patriot's house, who is awesome, down there just outside of Tucson a little ways. And she's working on getting a class put together. We're going to they're wanting to do some handgun stuff and some, well, actually, it's handgun, rifle, and disaster preparedness. Now, they've got a pretty good group going down there. They've got a preparedness group that trains. They go out and do stuff, and they practice, and they work together and stuff, and they put money into the things that they do instead of sitting around on Facebook and complaining about it. They really are doing stuff. So I'll probably be down there probably around the middle of May. For anybody that might be down in that area, I don't know if she wants to keep this private just with her group. When I get more information on it, I'll let you know. But we do have a designated rifleman class coming up, 6th and 7th of May, and that'll be some right here around the Sholo area. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be yet, but I'll be working that out here, and I'll have an answer for you by Monday. And hold on here just a second. I'm not sure what Amy's planning on doing next week. I'm going to try to, if I can, I'm going to try to convince her to do pre-records for Monday so that we can do that anytime at her leisure throughout the weekend. And I might do the same thing at least once in a while so that we have more family time on Mondays. We're just, especially this time of year, it's just so early for us, and it just kills us for other things that we need to be doing. So anyway, we'll know more about it throughout the weekend. We'll have a decision for you by Monday, let you know what's going on. All right, I put it out here on I talked to people last week, and there was some new thing. People had some questions about Glocks, and I see LB Sand made it in there, Tampico Scout, the Washington contingent's coming in there, and good portion of the regulars. Glad to see you all in. Charlie Brown's with us again. Good to see you, brother. Got a handful of anonymous in there. That's a good deal. But I talked to someone about the Glocks. I don't remember what the topic was. I said, I'll tell you what. We'll just haven't done it in a long time. So let's just spend some time next week and talk about Glocks. I was going to do it Monday and got sidetracked and didn't happen. So we're going to do it tonight. And there's also a few other gun-related things that I want to talk about. But there's been some new developments. There's been quite a few changes in several things since we talked about this last. So I don't think it will be a waste of time for you. But so if you have any questions, you got anything you want to talk about specifically, or any questions you have about Glock, any gun-related thing as far as that goes, and if I can't answer it, well, there may be somebody out there that can. Matter of fact, maybe Doc will come piling in here in a little bit with us, and he's pretty sharp on that kind of stuff, so we'll call on him if we need to, if he makes it in here. I don't know what's going on with him tonight, but... All right. So, as a lot of you know, I build these little deals. It's a Glock dry practice kit. Been making those things for a long time, and started back whenever Jason came to work for me back in 2006, I guess, and made a hell of a bunch of them, and. And then we, when they had the breakup of Southwest Shooting Authority and all the stuff out there in Kingman and all that, with all that crap went on. So it kind of put a damper in things for a little bit. But anyway, I got them back going again, going strong. Matter of fact, I'm making so damn many of them now I can't even get them out in time. And So I got this, the third order from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And I've sold them now 100 and I think maybe 160, I think, I'll have to look, of these Glock dry practice kits. And what these kits do is they allow you to practice with your Glock to what would dry practice, what we call it. A lot of people call it dry fire. We don't use that term. But in order to practice any of your techniques, your sight alignment, your trigger control, your presentation, your malfunction clearing, do all this stuff, and actually fire or pull the trigger and be able to reset the trigger without racking the slide. So you can do everything just like you were shooting real ammunition, except there's no recoil and no noise. So the hang on a minute, let's see what's going on here. Why is all of this trying to find out what's... Oh, I see. Okay. See if I can turn the sound off on this so it doesn't keep coming in here on you. I know you're... Let's see here. How do I do that? All right, let's try that. Okay, let's see if that works. Okay, anyway, I was kind of curious about this because, as far as I knew, the Army uses the Berettas, and there's still, you know, some places, some special operations stuff use the 1911s. So I was a little curious, and then I got part of my curiosity solved when I realized the email address. It's an AOSA email address, so it's a special operations group of some kind. I never have asked the guy where they're going or whatever. Well, then I got another order out of Fort Benning a couple of weeks ago for quite a number of them. And the email address on that was 75th Ranger Battalion. So I got to looking around, and lo and behold... I guess I've just been so busy running all over the place that I just wasn't aware that this had happened. But the some of Delta and Rangers and Marine Force Recon and whatnot are using Glocks. Hundreds of them. Are they mandated and issued? I guess some of them are. I don't know exactly what the policy is or what the rule is as far as the military goes. But there's been a, you know, kind of in sporadic use here for a while in these three or four different groups. And I guess the most common, believe it or not, is the, and for obvious reasons, I shouldn't say believe it or not, obviously the most common one is going to be the Glock 17 for commonality of ammo and the full-size gun and magazine capacity and all that stuff. And the Rangers are using the Glock 19, which is a little bit smaller version of the Glock 17, also in 9mm. Delta, on the other hand, are using a lot of Glock 22s, which is the same size gun, only in 40 Smith & Wesson. And Delta's always had a history of loving the 45s, especially the 1911s. However, there are operators now that are switching to the Glock 22. You know why? Take a guess. They are deemed more reliable in the sandy conditions and in the conditions that the units operate in these days. And it's always been kind of a mystery to me why some of these guys didn't start doing this a lot sooner. And LB Sand, I'm not sure where you heard that, but you know, I'll keep that in mind, and if I can figure out the source of that information, LB Sand says he can come over here tonight because he heard I was giving Glock 21s to all my listeners. Actually, it was Glock 17. I hate to disappoint you, but since you said that, then you don't get one. But anyway, so I've wondered why, in spite of my bias towards Glocks, which is extremely strong, I've always wondered why some of these guys didn't use them anyway, a lot earlier than, and especially the ones that are able to choose their own weapons, and primarily for the reliability factor, the simplicity of these guns, and the weight. You know, that's a huge deal. So, well, it's all becoming a reality now. I'm selling these Glock dry practice kits to these special groups out there, and I give them a great discount because of where they're, you know, what they're doing, where they're going. So there's a story here that was just posted a month ago from the Army Chief of Staff. I mean, he didn't do the story, but the Army Chief of Staff is quoted in here, and it says, in the midst of all this evaluating all these entries, you know, these new pistols and stuff, they're trying to figure out what the new pistol is going to be, and the Army Chief of Staff said he could save a lot of time and money by just making the decision. He said, we're not figuring out the next lunar landing. He said, this is a pistol. 2 years to test at $17 million? You give me $17 million on a credit card, and I'll call Cabela's tonight. I'll outfit every soldier, sailor, airman, and marine with a pistol for $17 million, and I'll get a discount on a bulk buy. And he said this to an audience. This wasn't something just in a private office conversation or something. This was an audience at the in Washington, D.C., according to a story from Army Times. And they're saying that he is searching for alternatives to the Beretta system. And he said the Army launched the XM-17 MHS competition in late August 2015 to find a replacement for the Beretta, which has been in service since 85. Now, I understand why they didn't go to Glocks then, because they were real new, and of course it was a little stupid to go out on the limb for that much money and not have any more history behind them than what they had. Of course, now we're looking at them, you know, they're over 30 years old and going strong. So this guy has criticized this 356-page requirement document and all this testing that's supposed to cost $17 million for technology that has existed for years. And that does seem like a tremendous waste of tax money and time, when you could just say, you know, get 100 people in a room together and say, okay, let's all sit around here with your experience, and let's put a few ideas together on paper and see what you'd think in 4 or 5 days that they ought to be able to come up with a solution of some kind. The story says behind the scenes, the Army Chief of Staff has done more. What was his name up here? Milley, I think it was. Mark Milley or Miley. I think it's Milley. He said that he's done more than criticize, including asking the Army's G8 Office, Special Operations Command, which oversees fielding of equipment, if there is room for the Army to join its pistol contract to buy Glock 19s. According to the source, who asked to remain anonymous because he's not authorized to speak to the media, the Glock 19, striker-fired 9mm pistol with a 4-inch barrel, capacity of 15 rounds, the standard magazine, and an accessory rail. They retail new for $500 or $600 each. The story says USASOC is currently paying a base price of about $320 each for Glock 19s. Son, if you can get a Glock for $320, why are we having this discussion? I mean, please. Says at that price, the Army should shell out about, what? At that price, the Army would have to shell out about $91.8 million to buy the 287,000 pistols called for this effort. Currently, the program is projected to cost $350 million. The Glock 19 doesn't meet some of the requirements of the deal, including doesn't meet some of the requirements of MSH documentation, including a more powerful chambering than 9mm. Well, you can get a Glock 23, and it'd be the same thing. Just in $350 million, so about 30% of the cost for all of the pistols that they need. Now, that's a compelling argument right there, even no matter what, hell. For the reputation that Glocks have behind them and get them for a third of the price of the other gun or what they have allocated for it, I think that's not a bad deal. He said, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that you don't have the authority to pick a pistol for the Army. This was the Army Chief of Staff again. No, I'm sorry. This was U.S. Representative Austin Scott from Georgia was talking to the Chief of Staff during House Armed Service Committee hearing with all the service chiefs present. I would bet that the four of you in uniform could probably in 10 minutes come up with an agreement on what the platform should be. I would think that with a quick click or two on an iPad that you could figure out what the retail price of the pistol was, what a decent price for the pistol was, and what we should be paying for that pistol if we were buying in quantities that we're talking about. I can't help but wonder that if it's this bad with a pistol, what about optics? What about rifles? All the things that we're buying. How much bureaucracy is there? What we could remove that would allow you to equip your men and women better, faster, and with less money. So there is a story that I am pleased to bring to you. Hang on just a second here. I must have swallowed a bug here or something during the break. I got something in my throat. So I think what I'm doing, let me go down here. Ralph Rose joined us again. Good to see you, brother. Let me cruise down through the chat room real quick and see what's going on. See if there's anything we need to talk about. Yeah, it is better late than never, Ralph. We're glad to see you in here. All right. Well, I think I'm going to take a little break here, and we'll come back and talk about some more of this stuff.
They got a vintage Victrola in 1951. Full of my favorite records that I grew up on. They got old Hank and Lefty and there's B-24. Set 'em up, Joe, and play Walking the Floor. Set 'em up, Joe, and play Walking the Floor. I'm gonna spend the night like every night before, playing E.T. and I'll play him some more. Yeah, set 'em up, Joe, and play Walking the Floor. Set 'em up, Joe, and play Walking the Floor. neighbors, they like what I play. Cause they've heard it every night since you walked away. Every day they replay, so B-24. Cause every night I run a needle through walking the floor. Every night I run a needle through walking the floor. I'm gonna spend the night like every night before. Playing E.T., I'm gonna play him some more. I gotta have a shot of them old troubadours. Set him up, Joe, and play walking the floor. Set him up, Joe, and play walking the floor. I said, set 'em up, Joe, and play walking the floor. Set 'em up, Joe, and play walking the floor.
Needs to be mended like a potter would mend a broken vase. Around a man, she would have died for taking care, to take care of all he needed. But the lady's fortress slowly. She's a broken lady, waiting to be mended.
I didn't like that last version.
Like a slowly turned into prison, and the warning signs he gave she never heeded. She vowed every morning that what God joined together, no one else in the world could put apart. Then the walls came trembling to the ground, and her
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell. And there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air. Rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me there.
All right. We're back. We were talking about Glocks a little bit. There's this is not good going, Ralph. Ralph says he's got 3 Glocks and sold his Berettas. Outstanding. Looks like I was up to 13 Glocks at one time. I think I am down to I'm down to 8 right now. 7 or 8. Now, let me think for a minute. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 8 or 9 right now. When I had the store, there was so many times, you know, people can talk all the crap they want to, but I had so many people come in. And let me pause right there for just a second, because Peanut Rider has posted a very valid question. I meant to address this, and thanks for reminding me, Peanut Rider. Peanut Rider asked if anyone's heard about Mike Vanderbo and what's going on. He says he hasn't posted anything for a while. Well, folks, I got bad news for you. I found out this morning that Mike Vanderbo has about a month left. And doctors have told him that the best he could hope for right now is about 30 days. So he will be greatly missed. He's been extremely instrumental in the 3% movement. I mean, he coined the term 3%ers back in the 90s, I think it was, quite a while back. And he has worked steadfastly, unceasingly, tirelessly for the Patriot movement ever since. He is a great patriot. He has been going downhill now for the last few months, and that's unfortunate that anybody has to continue to suffer and go downhill that long at a time. If it was going to happen, I would have liked to have seen it happen much faster than him having to go through this. But and now to know that I'm sure he has resigned himself to the fact that it's unavoidable at this point, and it is what it is. So for those of you that are the praying sort, we've got about a month left for Mike Vanderbo. So hang on a minute, I got something else coming in here. Okay. I have to answer this. Hang on just a minute. This is funny. All right, let's get back to business here. I was in the middle of telling you that there's been a lot of times that I've seen people come in with Berettas or Rugers or, you know, whatever, the 1911s to trade for Glocks. I mean, we hardly ever bought a new 1911 because we constantly had people trading them in for Glocks. And due in no small part to what we did and our classes and the testing that we did and the videos that we made and all this kind of stuff. But we had one guy that he brought in first a Smith & Wesson 10mm or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. But then he brought in a Nighthawk. And all the accessories. It was the highest quality, most tricked out Nighthawk that money can buy. You know, $3,000 or $4,000, I don't know what it is. And he traded that for 2 Glock 35s and some accessories and some custom work and some training for this Nighthawk. And we saw that pretty regularly. So anyway, there's over the last, since we've talked about Glocks very much here on the show, is some changes, and one of those things, or some, maybe I should say, some additions. And we've talked about the Glock 42 quite a bit, the little 380. Nice little gun. I'd like to get Amy one. I think she'd really like that. But the next one that came out was the Glock 43. Obviously, they're all in numerical order. They started with the Glock 17, not because it held 17 rounds, but because it was Gaston Glock's 17th international patent. And they came in numerical order after that. The 18 was the... let me go through these real quick. If you want to write them down, if you've been wondering, B2 basic in here? Let's see here. Let me look and see. B2 basic is not in here. All right, Tampico Scout, write this down for her. It might help her out at the store. Actually, she's probably got access to it at the store anyway, so it don't matter. The Glock 17, first one, full size 9mm. The next one was the full auto Glock. The Glock 18, same size as the 17, just select fire. And the 19 was the next one, the compact 9mm. And the 20 was the first, and I think still the only, gun that was designed specifically around and for the 10mm cartridge. There is no other gun out there that is not a takeoff from something else, or a modified 1911, or a modified CZ-75, or whatever. The Glock 20 was the very first all 100% dedicated 10mm. And what an awesome gun that one is. I've got one still. And the 21... exact same size gun as the 20, but it was the 45 ACP. The 22, full size, same size frame as the Glock 17, but the 22 is a 40 caliber. It's 40 Smith & Wesson. The 23 come out in the same sequence as the 17 and the 19. The 22 and 23 are the full size and the compact 40. The 24 was a... 6-inch 40 Smith & Wesson. Now, I'm not sure exactly where the 17L came in. The 17L was a 6-inch 9mm. What an awesome gun they are. Man, they shoot so well. You get really, really great velocity out of that 6-inch barrel. The 25 is a little... 380 that is not imported into the United States because of the import requirements by the ATF. The 25 and the 28 are a compact and a subcompact 380. The 26, subcompact 9mm. 27, subcompact 40. 28, I told you, was the 380. The 29 was, they call it a compact 45 ACP. It's a compact version of the 21. Still a pretty good size gun. It's more than, I've just never really had a desire to have that size of frame for anything. The 45 cartridge just does not have the draw for me that it does so many people, that they're willing to put up with that size of with that size of a frame. And I never have been. LB Sands is looking for a new CCW. What, in a 45? I shoot it better than a 9mm for some reason. You know, and that's kind of where I'm at right now, LB Sand. If you really want to go with that, then I would say the Glock. Well, no, you don't have to. Let me finish going through these, and you'll pick up on the one that. No, Peanut Rider, the 18 is not just a select fire for the Eurocops. The 18 is available hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them in use in the United States also. Yakima Glock, the only reason you can't have, well, we'll get into transferable thing. That's a whole another story there. But where were we at? Let's see, the 39 is, if you don't mind a wider gun, LB Sand, the 39 is a pretty good choice. It's bigger than I want to carry for a concealed. The 29, I'm sorry, 29 is where we're at. 29 is the, I got it backwards. The 29 is the compact 10 millimeter. The 30 is the 45. The 30 is the subcompact 45 ACP. 29 and the 30 are the same size frame, but the 29 is 10 millimeter and the 30 is 45 ACP. Sorry to confuse you there. The 31 was a full size 357 SIG. That's the same size as the Glock 17 and the Glock 22. And it was 31, 32, and 33 was full size, mid size, and subcompact in the 357 SIG. The 34, now the 34 is where that 9mm really shines. You get better velocities and easier to shoot at long range with the 17L, but it's just too big. For the competitions that were, or still are, you know, the, what is it, the IPSC and not IPSC, yeah, IPSC, no, IDPA and IPSC, yeah. Your gun has to fit in a box. They've got a box they set out there on the line. If it won't somehow or another be wiggled around to fit in that box, you can't use it. And the Glock 17L would not fit. The 24 would not fit. So they came out, they cut about 3/4 of an inch off of those and come out with the 34 and the 35, what they call the practical tactical. That was the long slide guns that will fit in the box so they could participate in the competition. Great guns. I've got a 34 and two 35s, and wow, they even with that 40 recoil, that longer slide, the recoil is so mild with that thing. And those are ones that the 34 is the one I used on the video when I was out there at Schatz Ranch that time. And that's the one I used on the video where I shot the 21-inch group at 300 yards. That was the Glock 34. And actually, I think, I don't remember which 40 I used. That may have been a 35 that I used in that video for the 40 caliber portion of that also. So that's 34 and 35. The 36 LB Sand might be one that you'd be more interested in. It's a single stack 45, and it's only six rounds. One in the chamber, seven, but it's much slimmer, nice size for concealed carry. So if you like 45 ACP, I would suggest the 36. The 37, excuse me. Hang on a minute, dadgummit. That bug I swallowed keeps crawling back up here. Can't get rid of it for some reason. All right, the 37 was a, still is, the 45 GAP, 45 GAP, stood for Glock Automatic Pistol. And what an awesome caliber that was. If you really like the 45, now I probably wouldn't go with the 45 GAP now because of it's just kind of finally faded away. It did real well. It was our third best-selling caliber in the Glock for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And it finally faded off, and you just don't hear too much about it anymore. Matter of fact, I've got quite a bunch of 45 GAP ammo still left over if anybody's looking for it at a good price. But the 45 GAP was a great cartridge. If you like 45, it was accurate as hell. Man, that thing would shoot well. And every one that we had, we did grip reductions and stuff on a lot of them, and and they just shot exceedingly well. One whole groups at 10 yards was the norm regularly. And it shoots the same speed. It's up to what would be considered a plus P pressures in a shorter cartridge. What the 45 gap was designed to make a 45 caliber round that would fit a 9mm size pistol. So you don't have that huge, big, bulky, damn grip of the 45 ACP of the Glock 21, but you have the same performance. Actually, the gap slightly outperforms the ACP, very slightly, mostly on paper, but it does. So that's, what was that? That was the 37, 38, and 39. The 40, believe it or not, has just recently come out, the Glock 40. Everybody talks about a Glock 40. Well, the 40 is the new 6-inch 10mm. And the 41 is a 6-inch 45. The 42, I hope I'm not mixing up the 41 and 42. I don't remember. I'm doing all this from memory. The 42, I don't think so. The 42 is the 380. And the 43 is the new tiny subcompact single stack 9mm. Now, if you want a good concealed carry gun, that's the way to go. Now, I will tell you, though, they bite a little bit. And that little bitty light frame, they're a little bit sharp for some people. I shoot it okay. Amy didn't like it too much. She got one. We had it for a while, and she shot it a few times, and she wound up trading it off. It was just a little sharper than she wanted to practice with. So that's the whole list. And then there was some grip changes, you know, and some texture changes and stuff in there. And the finger grooves and the light rails and all this stuff. And I guess we can go over that real quick, some of that. As they first started out, and by the way, for those that say, you know, the Glock has improved itself, how's it going to be 100 years from now? Well, it don't matter how they're going to be 100 years from now. What matters is how they're going to be 100 years from when they came out. And we've got over 30 years. We've got a third of that behind us already. And I just, last week, modified a first-generation Glock 17, one of the very first ones that came out. It is just as good as it was when it was new. There's been no changes, no deterioration, no nothing. I see no problem with these guns making 100 years. We're over 30%. We're right at 30% into it right now. And, well, we are. We're over 30% into it right now. And there's been no changes at all. So I am optimistic that they will be doing just fine in 100 years. And if any of you are still listening to the Shooting Bench 100 years from now, 70 years from now, I'll clue you in as to how they're doing. So there, Anonymous, I'm not sure who that Anonymous is, 9743, loves the Glock 43. I thought it was a pretty neat gun, too. It's not anything that I want to carry every day. The strictly for capacity. I told you, I've got to the point now where I carry a full-size Glock 22 and two extra magazines. I got 45 rounds on me at any given time. And I think with the way things are going in the country, in the world right now, that a little extra ammo is not a bad thing. But the 43 handles well, as far as I'm concerned. It shoots well, just as fast to reload as any of the other Glocks. The controls and everything are familiar and similar, and no reason not to try it. And they're affordable. You know, they're a lot cheaper than a lot of the other slim 9mm. So. In the beginning, the Glock only had two pins. It was the trigger housing pin in the back, right at the web of your hand, and the trigger pin is all there was. Well, after the 40 Smith & Wesson came out, you know, the first few had two pins, and they decided, you know what, this is not going to work. we're going to wind up tearing something up here. So they put in a third pin, which is the little small diameter steel locking block pin right above the trigger pin. And no, Doc Glock is not going downhill. They're going up, not down, so they will not be producing 1911s. But so the reason they did this, because they didn't want it, it's easy to take a 9mm barrel or a 9mm conversion barrel and put it in the 40 caliber frame slide, and that works fine. But if someone were to take the whole slide and everything off of a 40 caliber and put it on a 9mm, the old 9mm frames, you may start running into some problems with the battering of the frame. So they made all of them, not just the 40s. Now they start when the third generation guns come out, that's when they added the third pin. There was also a generation 2.5. That was it was a two pin gun, but it had finger grooves and a light rail. It was a transition between. I've got one. My Glock 17 is a generation 2.5. And when they went to the third generation, it has finger grooves, light rail, and the third pin. So that way, if somebody took the whole top end off of a Glock 22 and stuck it on a new 17, it wouldn't take any battering. Now, those of you that are familiar with ballistics and the specifications of these cartridges, you'll know that the 40 and the 9mm are both 35,000 pounds. Not one of them is not any more, no higher pressure than the other one. The trouble is, and I've tried to explain this to you before, the thing is the diameter, you've got a wider area there. If you took that same 35,000 pounds of pressure and put it in a cartridge the size of an F-150 and backed it up to a house and pulled the trigger, it's going to mow the house down. So we've got that larger shell and the larger diameter there, and that 35,000 pounds it just is a little more battering than the 9mm. If you took that 35,000 pounds and put it in something the size of a pencil, now you also get into an argument there that the smaller diameter, you know, you have to beef up the breech face there a little bit, because it's like you put that 35,000 pounds behind something the size of a needle, and the recoil wouldn't be so as much against you, but the small diameter would be the difference between driving to drive a ice pick through a Carhartt jacket or a baseball bat. Does that make sense to you? That smaller diameter is going to tear up guns if you don't beef up the breech face there a little bit. So anyway, that's the difference. That's why the 40 caliber is not any higher pressure. It's just bigger diameter, and that's why they got rid of the two pin guns. I'll have peanut writer. I'll have to say I'm not a big fan of any of the 1911s or the CZs, but the CZ-75 doesn't feel bad. I wouldn't feel horribly embarrassed if I had to shoot a CZ-75. I do like those pretty well. And CZ makes a damn fine gun. I don't care what anybody says. The metal that they use, their metallurgy is second to none. And they're good quality guns. I have no problem with them. Let's see, was there anything else? I guess I could go on and on about Glocks all night long, about the bears they've killed and the elk they've killed and the deer they've killed, and as far as a hunting cartridge goes, that 10mm is the cat's meow for small, medium, and even some big game. It's loaded properly. It is nipping right at the heels of the 41 Magnum. You guys have probably heard me say that a dozen times, but so won't get into that too much, but all right. Can't think of anything else unless there's any questions come up. We're running over time just a little bit already, so I'll tomorrow night I will not be on. We will have a Liberty Lounge loaded up and ready for you at the appropriate time, but I will not be on live. I will be in Phoenix at a Liberty rally. and I'll be back on Monday. And we'll have the announcement Monday, probably on Facebook first, and I'll put it here in the chat room as to what Amy plans to do. Like I said, I'm going to try to talk her into doing a pre-record over the weekend at her leisure, so that we can retain those slots, not mess up our schedule, and have a little bit more time on Monday nights. So, and with all that, I think I'm going to find my closing deal here and get out of here, and we'll see you Monday night. And I sure appreciate all of you for joining me.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.